My affirmations. You can write. Your mind is brilliant. The dark holds no secrets for you, nor any hidden terrors. Masturbation is normal and healthy. Sandra does not feel that way about your genitalia. What she said was a joke, and she is sorry. You will live for 1,000 years, and no one can stop you. There is no such thing as mummies. Money will pour on you like rain, and you shall want for nothing. Sandra is incapable of orgasm. This happens sometimes. You never masturbate. That is a lie. You are well loved and admired by all. They're just jealous of your talent. Even if mummies are real, they don't just get up and walk around. That would just be in a movie. That ulcer you had was not real, and not related to mummies in any way. Sandra loves you unconditionally, and she should be grateful for your chronic masturbation. Your writing is dictated by the Empress of Dreams herself to entice humanity towards enlightenment. That moonchild ritual you did with Keith wasn't a failure. It was just a different kind of success that was mostly Keith's fault. You are an excellent boat captain. They were all just cowards. People who say you masturbate in the bathroom at the seafood buffet are liars. Sandra enjoys your time with her. That was just one of her jokes. Everyone loves you. Love just takes different forms sometimes. You don't masturbate, but it would be normal and healthy if you did. You aren't lonely. Sandra loves you. Mummies don't masturbate. You can write thousands of words at will. Frustration and mental constipation are unknown to you. Your mind is brilliant. Mummies are not going to eat you while you sleep. Sandra will protect you. You will go sailing together. Everything is going to be just fine. You never will forget how to breathe. They all love you. This is how everyone feels. They will all love you forever. And every day, you will listen to the Post Culture Podcast. I'm in Cleveland, or a reasonable facsimile thereof. The sun is shining, and I'm driving down the freeway towards some kind of geographical center, the place where the buildings are tallest. The lake is shimmering. The fan blades of giant wind turbines spin with metronomic precision as they pour feeble blood back into the city. Everything is familiar in a way that only underlines the unfamiliar. The architecture of urban decay different from more familiar forms of urban decay. The concrete aged into different colorations and patterns of cracks. The hieroglyphics of graffiti speaking a different dialect of incomprehensible. I have been sent here and I don't know why. A mission to complete, mysterious orders, possibly some unusual claptrap about ghosts. Right now I merely have to see this place, and to understand some piece of its geography. I have to learn not just the freeways, but the customary ways of driving them, respecting all local traditions and superstitions. I exited from the airport in a rental car that smells like the comforting aftermath of a powerful chemical orgasm, and have circled the city more than once. A lost little electron doing halos around a seemingly impenetrable center. My nose is bleeding again. I must monitor this. Am I in Cleveland? The signs say Cleveland, but they are just ignorant sigils of a long-lost civilization. Cities change. They are not so fixed to this earth as one may suspect. Architecture shifts and reforms like sand in the tide, and history can be made up on the fly. Nothing is fixed. Even landmarks shift. I missed my exit again. We describe roads the way we describe things that bring life or allow for free passage. Arteries and corridors. But that is only part of their purpose. They delineate and separate, cordon off and redirect. They bring life, but decide where to and how, and leave some spaces atrophied. Some think you can't really know a city just driving through it, but you can't really know it unless you have, same as you can't really know a country without knowing its borders, whether they be cartographical or mental. I have a dossier. It's in my bag. There will be assignments to complete, contacts to make, mysteries to fathom. But not today. Today I rest, settle in, make a comfortable space for myself. At least I will, once I manage to find my exit. I hope this is Cleveland. I may end up very confused if not. I see my exit ahead. The center of a city is strange. So often the natural gathering point of a community, it's so often an antiseptic edifice of concrete that has to be traveled into as if it can't maintain any life of its own. As I enter the corridors of what I presume to be Cleveland, I see life around, but it's a commuter-like life. Professionally dressed among aged art deco, effectively homeless between the night spots. There is life here, but not obvious life. I'll see if I can find it soon enough. Sunlight fades as I pull into my hotel, a grimly chemical upscale affair where I am to shuttle to the top floor. My room is a bed, crisply made, a television, desk, a place to perform my disgusting hygienic functions. I use some tissue to wipe blood from my nose and drop it into an otherwise empty trash bin where it sits by its lonesome self. Unpacking, I place my dossier on the nightstand for review. I look out the open blinds. I see the lake, its shimmering, dulling in the twilight. An empty office building, all of its tedious secrets revealed to me, sits opposite. On the writing desk by the window, a small card with a simple message. Welcome to Cleveland.
Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. Wrote the book of the seventh seal. Who's that writing, John the Revelator? Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. Well, who's that writing, John the Revelator? Wrote the book of the seventh seal. You know, God walked down in the cool of the day, called Adam by his name, and he refused to answer because he's naked.
Next time you find yourself traveling down the Pacific Coast Highway, why not stop for a spell at the Shady Acres Motel and Lounge? We've got a pool, hot tub and sauna, and a complimentary continental breakfast. Every room has an ocean view and easy access to some of the most gorgeous beaches on the coastline. So come on down to Shady Acres Motel and Lounge. You're worth it.
Traveling down the Pacific Coast Highway? and come stop at the Golden Sunset Motel. Our clean, modern rooms offer both comfort and luxury, with an ocean view in each room and ready beach access that offers fun for the whole family. We have pet-friendly rooms and a complimentary continental breakfast that's actually good. So book a stay at the Golden Sunset Motel, because you deserve better.
A trip to the ocean is about relaxation, and no place on the coast offers more opportunities to relax than Shady Acres Motel and Lounge. Our restaurant is world-renowned and won't try to serve you toxic razor clams, which is more than can be said for some other local beach stops. Every room has free premium cable and broadband internet, so you won't feel like an isolated weirdo. Shady Acres. Why settle for less?
When on vacation, you want everything to go just right and not have to worry if you're going to catch a venereal disease from the bath towels. You want a pristinely clean room, staff that is attentive and courteous, and a pool that doesn't frequently fall up with overflow from the local municipal sewage treatment plant. And that's what we offer at the Golden Sunset Motel. Friendliness, cleanliness, and a room that doesn't rent by the hour to truck stop hookers. Golden Sunset Motel, because you respect yourself.
Sometimes you hear the word sinkhole whispered about certain beach properties. Not about Shady Acres Motel and Lounge, but certainly about some others in the area. Ask yourself, have I ever seen the movie Psycho? Would I want to stay in a hotel run by somebody like that? Here at Shady Acres Motel and Lounge, we accept people from all backgrounds, and won't make you follow the tenets of some deranged doomsday cult while you're staying here. Our continental breakfast is generous and filling, and not part of an anti-masturbation dietary regime. So come stay at Shady Acres Motel and Lounge. It's better than ending up in a shallow grave.
Listen, this is the Golden Sunset Motel, and we're going to be straight with you. Shady Acres Motel and Lounge is a cesspit. Things have happened in that sauna of theirs that would make Jesus regret forgiving humanity. The primary qualification most of their employees have is they'll give hand jobs in exchange for expired medications. The reason the restaurant is world-renowned is it once caused one of the single largest public health emergencies in state history. I don't care if the owners sue us for slander, because if they want to take it to court, they'll need to prove they aren't addicted to horrible drugs. So come stay with us at the Golden Sunset Motel, for the sake of the children.
Hi. This is the Shady Acres Motel and Lounge. You live in a place long enough and you get a feel for the ambient energy of the geography. And there's an evil to this place, something dark and old, that wears a shiny face to hide a soul of pure bile. Over the years, travelers have gone missing. A lone woman here, a couple there, some kids suspected of getting pulled away by a riptide. Individually, they get written off as isolated incidents, personal tragedies without any connection. But consider that all of them stayed at the Golden Sunset Motel, and a dark pattern becomes clear. So come stay with us here at the Shady Acres Motel and Lounge. Together we can stop the evil. No longer offering beach access, as the access stairs from our property were burned down under mysterious circumstances.
At Golden Sunset Motel, we believe moral decay has infected the soul of this coastline like syphilis in the brain of a dying whore. People who stay at Shady Acres Hotel and Lounge are filth and will never know the Lord's forgiveness. We have it on good authority that sexual acts with farm animals are common, and that every surface of every room has been ritualistically smeared with the semen of a pedophile. Every night we pray, the entire monstrous edifice crumbles into the sea. So come stay at Golden Sunset Motel. Together, we shall cleanse the earth.
This is the owner of the Shady Acres Motel and Lounge. I'm currently standing on a beach, pointing a gun at the owner of the Golden Sunset Motel. Up on the cliffside, our respective businesses are in flames. I would kill this man, but for the fact that he is pointing a gun at me as well, leaving us in something of a standoff. If I fire, so will he, and we'll both die. So we stand here facing each other, unwilling to be the catalyst of the short chain that will end both our lives. Yet neither of us will lower our gun for fear the other will take advantage. We've been standing here for hours, and slowly the evening tide is coming in. It's already up to my knees, and will soon engulf both of us. This is how we'll die, too scared not to kill each other. But before that happens, let us know about your stay, and if there's anything we could do to make it better next time.
Motherless children is a hard time when the mother's dead. Motherless children is a hard time when the mother's dead. They are driven out in the cold, God knows where to go. Motherless children is a hard time when the mother's dead.
Once the most popular form of entertainment in America and the cornerstone of much that came after, vaudeville has been largely lost to the modern cultural memory. An amalgamation of music, theater, comedy, and dance, the documentation of actual vaudeville acts exists only in scattered recordings, collected playbills, and an oral history passed down through the hallowed halls of American popular performance. But now we are happy to introduce to you a fascinating document. Discovered among the leavings of a Brookline, Massachusetts estate sale and written by an unknown enthusiast, a document that has come to be known as the Brookline Vaudeville Ledger. A meticulous recording of various performances of an unnamed comedy duo. The ledger is hardly comprehensive, including little more than a listing of surrounding acts, a description of the duo's performances, and a few other scant details. Why this recording was made, and who for, are lost to time. But brief though it is, it offers a fascinating glimpse into a form of entertainment that once brought pleasure to millions. We now present a selected reading from the Brookline Vaudeville Ledger. The performance opens with a young male buck dancer, followed by an elderly gentleman reciting light verse. The comedy duo enters and begins a routine where the straight man quizzes his fat, chortling companion about the latter's mother-in-law. They then discuss the merits of suicide in hushed tones for the next hour. Closes with a dancing mule performance. The performance opens with a light opera recital, followed by a dapper young gentleman reciting saucy limericks. The comedy duo enters and performs a routine where the straight man shows growing frustration with his fat, chortling companion while attempting to ascertain the profession of the latter's uncle. During the course of the performance, each of them draws a slender dagger and stabs the other repeatedly in the torso and limbs, concluding the performance with a series of comic pratfalls and the copious pools of blood soaking into the stage. Closes with a performance from a mesmerist. Performance opens with a burly gentleman exhibiting feats of strength, followed by a recital of light opera. The comedy duo enters. They begin a routine centered around the straight man's confusion regarding the fat chortling companion's recitation of the names of various amateur baseball players. During the course of the performance, they reveal to one another that they are in fact cooking and devouring each other. The performance is closed by a tasteful burlesque. Performance opens with a young buck dancer, followed by a middle-aged gentleman performing Sunny Boy with piano accompaniment. The comedy duo enters and begins a routine where the straight man attempts to explain the concept of a telephone to his fat chortling companion with little success. During this, each holds a knife to the neck of the other's firstborn child, each daring the other to be the first to show weakness. Performance closes with a dancing mule act. Performance opens with an elderly gentleman coughing blood onto the stage, followed by a dapper young man taking his own life with a derringer. The buck dancer runs screaming across the stage, punching his own head in a euphoric fury. The comic duo enters and begins the process of a disinterested mechanical lovemaking upon each other, their bodies a flabby expression of sickening decay. All the while, the theater begins to burn, smoke asphyxiating the entombed audience. Performance ends with a tasteful burlesque. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Post Culture Podcast, Death Cult Bake Sale. Music in this episode was provided by Fourth Shift. You can follow them at fourthshift.bandcamp.com. Additional music provided by Sun House, The Carter Family, Bix Beidebeck, and Doc Boggs. Additional voices in this episode provided by Adam Theron Lee Wrench. You can follow his podcast, Stop Rewind, any place where you can find a fine podcast. And remember, Santa Claus lets murders happen. Remember that.